Flash Notes Podcast, episode number 6, author interview with Dr. Alan Christensen, author of The Adrenal Reset Diet. Welcome to the Flash Notes Podcast, the podcast for busy professionals that need knowledge now. Brought to you by Flash Notes Book Summaries at getflashnotes.com, where you can get best-selling business and self-improvement book summaries that you can read or listen to in under 20 minutes. My name is Dean Bukhari, your host here at the Flash Notes Podcast, where every week we work to bring you the big ideas and actionable insights from some of the best business and self-improvement books out there to help you succeed in life and in business. So tune in, buckle up, and enjoy the ride as we dive into today's episode right here on the Flash Notes Podcast. Hey, what's up? It's Dean Bukhari coming back at you with another episode of the podcast. And today I have a guest here on the show. His name is Dr. Alan Christensen. He's the author of a book titled The Adrenal Reset Diet, Strategically Cycle Carbs and Proteins to Lose Weight, Balance Hormones, and Move from Stressed to Thriving. So here's the deal. If you're feeling tired, if you feel more tired than usual, if you're gaining weight and you haven't changed your eating habits, if you're super stressed, don't know why, it could be something other than the food you eat or the things that you do. It could have something to do with your adrenal glands. So Dr. Christensen is an expert in that realm. So today we have him on the show to talk to us a little bit about how we can solve those problems and what steps you can take to repair your adrenal fatigue and exactly what that is in and of itself. So Dr. Christensen, welcome to the show.
Hey, Dean. Thank you so much for having me. I'm glad to be here with you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So if you could, can you tell us a little bit about your story and kind of why you wrote the book?
Yeah, for sure. You know what? Why I wrote the book and why I went into medicine, they all kind of wrap in together. I was a fat kid. I was epileptic. I had a lot of limitations from cerebral palsy and my seizures, and I gained a ton of weight from that. And I was a nerdy kid. I could read at an early age, and I enjoyed spending time with books. And about 12 years old, I just really, really realized that, you know, people were judging me for how I looked, and it was taking me in the wrong direction socially, and it was pretty crushing. I got obsessed about reading health books back then, and this was quite a while ago. There weren't, you know, we didn't have the internet. There weren't so many books available.
Yeah.
But yeah, there was some, and got them from the library and made myself a bit of a plan, and I was able to improve my health over time. And it drew me into medicine, and especially areas where weight was more than just about habits, in which weight was tied to medical conditions.
Mm. So that kind of led to you getting into the medical field and then eventually focusing on, I mean, how did you get into like this specific, you know, the thyroid, the adrenal glands?
Yeah, I was in my residency, and there was a gal that was a patient I was working with, and she was dropping out of school for medical disability. She was diagnosed as having fibromyalgia. And that's kind of a dead end. You know, there's actually very different types of diagnosis in medicine. You know, one type is we've actually found something. Another type is we haven't found anything, but we know what it looks like.
Yeah.
Fibromyalgia, there's really no findings. There's actually a lack of findings, a lack of explanation, but a pattern of symptoms that fits together.
Which are so, basically like massive muscle fatigue, right? You're just tired.
Yeah, totally. More than 50% of your energy is lost. You're restricted in your activities. It's gone on for more than 6 months. And if you press on these tender points, these defined tender points in the body, more than 14 of them are painful. And that's how we define it. But it turned out she had thyroid disease. And I suspected that based upon some extracurricular readings and some work I had done, and her life just transformed from that. You know, she got back in school and, you know, was able to regain her activities, get back to and cheer again, and, you know, went to college, and all that stuff was fine. Mm-hmm. And so that was good. So I wrote my first two books on thyroid disease and had a big focus on that. And then I've been watching this whole global obesity crisis emerge.
Yeah.
You know, back in 1990, one of the first signs of that was They make these maps, these state maps of what percent each state is of overweight or obesity. Mm-hmm. And in 1990, they had to make a new color code. Yeah, they never had a state pass 15% before. and they made a brand new color code for that. And it was kind of shocking. They're like, wow, you know, what's up with this? And
yeah.
So by 2000, so a decade later, that 15%, which was the high watermark basically, well, that was now the low watermark. So in 1990, Mississippi hit just over 15%. That was the big thing. And then 2000, by the year 2000, Arizona was at 14.9, Colorado was 14.6, and those were the lowest in the country.
Mm-hmm.
Everything else was way above that.
I mean, I remember reading not too long ago that this is the first generation of children, you know, the kids growing up and teenagers in this, you know, today. This is the first generation that is on track to die before their parents. Is this true as a result of like diabetes and just the crazy obesity epidemic that's been going on?
That's what we're hearing. You know, all of human history, there's been this gradual extension of the expected lifespan, but you're right, now we're reversing that. Here's a crazy stat that I haven't written up formally enough just yet, but I did some number crunching. Think about all the tragedy of war. You know, everyone has a sense about what an awful thing that is. And so since like 1800, every war on the planet, just try to imagine like all that together in terms of lives lost and you know, the economic strain of all that, World War I, World War II, you know, Persian Gulf, Vietnam. I mean, honestly, everything all together. So what we're looking at in this coming decade as far as deaths from obesity-related complications trumps all the deaths from all the wars on the whole planet since 1800.
Wow.
And the costs, the medical costs of complications are over sixfold the costs of all the wars on the whole planet since 1800.
That's a ridiculously sad thing. And it's like, it's so funny because we spend, you know, we'll put our trash, our health, and put it last on the list of priorities, but then we end up spending so much more to try and fix it than if we had just done the right thing in the beginning.
Right.
It's funny. So let's talk a little bit about like the thyroid diseases, adrenal glands, things of that nature. So what are adrenal glands? What is a thyroid problem? What's the connection between those things?
Yeah, so the adrenals, you've got a couple little lumps of tissue on top of each kidney. You know, people often have a visual idea of what a kidney looks like a kidney bean-shaped thing, and they're in your back. They control your formation of fluids. Mm-hmm. And on top of each of them, there's a little thing about the size of a nickel, and it controls whether you're in a state of fight or flight or a state of relaxation and repair.
Mm-hmm.
And fight or flight, it's also fight or flight or famine, meaning your body's preparing to starve. So you're holding on to all your calories. So the thyroid gland, you know, vaguely the shape of a butterfly, and it kind of sits just below the Adam's apple, so on the lower neck.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just your thermostat. You know, it controls how quickly your body's generating energy. And these two glands have a lot of ways they play back and forth. You know, when one is, when you're in that fight or flight mode, your thyroid has to slow your body's metabolic rate. So you're holding on to calories and not burning them as fast. So they strongly relate to one another, and they both control your body weight.
So how does somebody, so what are the things that come into play with people? How do you figure out whether you've just ran your adrenals to the ground? I mean, is it drinking too many energy drinks? Is it too much caffeine? Is it pollution? Is it food? Is it a combination of all of them? And how can people fix it if they feel tired?
As far as what happens and how it happens, all those things you mentioned are just spot on. Those are real valid. You know, overdoing it and erratic schedules. You know, caffeine is kind of like credit card debt to your adrenals. You know, you get some energy, but you got to pay back your rest plus interest in the future. But there's a lot of things that you wouldn't think of as like obvious stressors that really are stressors in a bigger sense of the word. And that includes things like pollutants, you know, loud noises as well, artificial light, the mental emotional stressors that we think about, but factors like fructose as well, like processed foods in the diet.
Mm-hmm.
So collectively, all these things strain the adrenals and push us into that survival mode, that storage response. And as far as how someone knows that that's happening to them, you know, there's a lot of general symptoms. That's one of the tough parts about medicine, is that there's 1,000 ways your body can be wrecked that all feel the same.
Mm.
But one of the unique things about the adrenals is that they also control your daily rhythms. So waking up in the morning, being alert, you know, falling asleep at a certain time, that's all based upon adrenal fluctuations. So one of the most specific things that points towards an adrenal problem is the same kind of a symptom showing up at the same time each day. So that afternoon crash, or the mind racing at 3 a.m, or the random weakness or dizziness at certain times. So whenever there's a certain time of day, that's a very specific thing that points towards the adrenals being involved.
Gotcha. Okay. And so obviously, you know, food and exercise or lack thereof plays a huge part in this, right? What are some foods that people need to avoid that people think are either good for them or that just commonly get eaten that cause these problems?
Yeah, so I always think about diet in terms of restrictive effects and prescriptive effects. Mm-hmm. So one is, what do you avoid to not make things worse?
What should you replace it with?
Yeah, so the adrenals, they have to manage your blood sugar also. They've got a lot of jobs, and they're keeping your glucose in a very narrow range for your brain to be happy and for brain to function. Some foods make that more of a challenge, and those that quickly cause your blood sugar to rise are the biggest ones in that capacity. So, you know, processed sugar.
Right.
And probably sugar sweetened beverages as the very worst of those.
You know, like what about for instance, you know, artificial sweeteners? Some people say they're good. Some people say they're terrible for you. Do they trick the body's insulin function into thinking that you're putting sugar in there, and then somehow, some way, that's got some odd impact as well? Or,
you know, I hear that quite a bit, and there's been a few studies looking at that, not a lot of wonderful ones. The data's been mixed. So, you know, my thought on that is they're not, if I had to choose, I don't really do artificial sweetened beverages, but if I had to choose, I would take them over sugar. So if that's a stepstone for someone, it's probably a helpful step in the right direction, but you're better off avoiding those as well long term.
Gotcha. Well, what about like stevia and Truvia?
You know, both pretty harmless. So Truvia is a more concentrated extract of stevia. And, you know, something that happens a lot in our health space is it's really a version of gotcha journalism. You know, we find this scary ingredient in something, and we make a lot of publicity about, oh my God, if you eat that, you're going to fall over dead in a matter of minutes. And
Right. It's
been kind of overblown. You know, there's a valid point to it. I mean, for sure, you can eat a can of tuna every day and get mercury toxic. There's very real things.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I made a blog post a while back about this long list of horrifying sounding chemicals that are all naturally occurring things in blueberries.
<You
know>? So in the big scheme of things, yeah, there are some compounds in stevia that if you took out of context could freak you out, but you could get freaked out about anything if you did that same little chemical game with it. So
Right. It,
pretty harmless stuff. It's a flavor. Some people find it more bitter than others, but no big drawbacks to it. Donna Gates introduced it to the U.S. from Asia many decades ago, and she's a good friend, and it's a useful enough thing for flavoring foods without calories or without synthetic substances.
Cool. And okay, so what foods, for instance, should people replace them with? One of the things that makes me so interested in this topic in specific is many, many years ago, I was having a lot of these symptoms that you talk about in your book, you know, feeling tired, gaining weight, and I'm trying to go on a diet and decrease my calorie intake, and it's not working, and then that makes you stressed because nothing's working and you're tired, and all this stuff. It's like this vicious cycle. And then I basically decided to just go on this elimination diet. I eventually eliminated gluten, tried that for a month, eliminated dairy, tried that for a month, went vegan, tried that for a month, went pescatarian, tried that for a month, just did all these 30-day tests until I kind of realized and found my own little sweet spot. And eventually that kind of transformed into this obsession with health and fitness, as many of our listeners know. But, what can somebody do? Like, what are the best steps for people? What foods should they eat and replace with if they're having these problems?
Well, as much variety as possible, for one thing. The unique message with the book is somewhat timely because right now we're terrified of carbohydrates, as a culture. Funny thing, I'm just finishing up a story right now writing about the low-fat phase of the 80s and 90s. And
yeah.
The conventional wisdom is that We went low fat. You know, we ended up really driving the obesity crisis because we dropped our fat intake so much,
and that caused sugar. All the
right. And you know, the funny thing is, I've got some hard numbers on this I'm putting out. We never went low fat.
Really?
We never went low fat. We were told to, but we didn't.
Really?
Yeah.
Was really it because the sugar transforms into fat, or
no,
is
we
it
just never went low fat?
Oh, not even eating low fat?
Our fat intake reduced by exactly zero.
Good Lord.
So we did add in the snack wells, and we did add in the pretzels, and we did add in the jelly beans, but we did not lower our fat intakes at all.
That's so funny.
Yeah, most argue that a low-fat diet starts at about 25% and really picks up like 15 to 20%. We never got below 33% fat.
Wow.
And our percent calories by fat went down a little bit to that level, but not because we lowered our absolute fat intake, only because we raised our calorie intake.
Hmm.
So we actually never did a low-fat experiment. But back at that point, you know, there was a time in which I remember this crazy idea that maybe olive oil wasn't that dangerous of a food. Maybe you could put a drop of it on your bread and it wouldn't kill you. And maybe some fats were okay. And so now we've gone full circle and we're terrified of carbs.
Yeah.
And here's the thing is that you can sustain your blood glucose without carbs. You know, no debate about that. But to do so, your body will use your muscles to turn them into carbs.
Right, right.
And you're going to use cortisol. You're going to use stress hormones to make that happen. So yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I was gonna ask you about keto and putting your body into ketosis.
Yeah, you know, funny thing, people are often saying how it's the body's preferred state, but if it was, we would always be there, and it wouldn't be hard to get to it.
By the way, if you're listening and you have no idea what I just said, and keto sounds like a kung fu movie to you, keto is basically when you eliminate carbs from your diet completely,
and protein.
What's that?
You have to also go very low in protein.
Yeah, low protein, high fat. And so it's there's a lot of mixed, you know, opinions on it.
It's a fad right now. I've got a really good friend I just saw a few days ago. She's one of the top researchers. They're doing studies on this in terms of treating some types of seizures and some types of cancer. Mm. And it may be a useful state in some medical conditions, but it's really difficult to get someone into that state. And they're pretty miserable when they're there, and they're sick when they're there. She manages the complications, and she's aware of the complications. And yeah, if you're eating protein, even more than about 20% at the least, your body tries to stay out of ketosis.
Mm.
So you can function that way, but there's no logical reason to think it's the body's preferred state. We don't function. We put out more stress hormones. So the unique message about the new book is that to lose weight long term, to feel better and to gain your energy is to fix your stress hormones, is to move them back to a healthy rhythm. And when they work well, we make some cortisol, we make a burst of cortisol that wakes us up in the morning, but then we shut it off to get deep restorative sleep. And carbs and cortisol, they tie into one another. So if you have no carbs, your body uses cortisol to make carbs out of your muscle. And so you raise your cortisol when your blood sugar is too low. So the very simple strategy I put together was having a very high protein, healthy breakfast, then strategically having good carbs at night.
Right.
And that way you can have a good daily cortisol rhythm.
What kind of carbs would you recommend? Like a set of complex carbohydrates?
Yeah, I'm a fan of the slowest burning types and a variety of them. There's a unique thing called resistant fiber that's found in beans and legumes, and it has like no equals as far as how well it stabilizes cortisol and how well it boosts metabolism and improves the bowel flora. So I love beans and legumes and also vegetable starches, intact whole grains, and variety within those things.
So an example of like a good breakfast would be what, maybe like a shake.
I tell people breakfast, either do a shake or do leftovers.
There you go.
The things you think of as breakfast food, they pretty much suck.
Yeah, really, they're terrible for you.
Yeah, do leftovers from a good dinner. Do a nice piece of fish and some veggies, something like that. Do your typical paleo low carb meal. That's an awesome breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can do some good similar nutritional profiles from shakes.
Gotcha. And then maybe like what are some good snacks that people can have throughout the day?
You know, recommend. As far as like snack time, that's a great time for produce.
Mm.
One of the things that everyone lines up on is the fact that we need to get more vegetables and
right.
more variety of good vegetables. So between meals, if someone really is hungry, either have a larger meal and have a little leftovers if you really have unstable blood sugar, or just munch on some veggies. I mean, you need more of those anyway.
Yep. I just tell people to just juice. That's what I just juice every single morning. So we just have a juicer and I'll just crank out all my vegetable intake for the day first thing. So I don't need to worry about it. okay. So let's talk about exercise. What kind of exercise and activity level would you recommend for somebody who's got these, like, you know, who might have adrenal fatigue problems or thyroid issues? What would you recommend that they do as far as exercise goes?
You know, when I get into detailed recommendations, there's an easy thing on adrenalquiz.com, which is a free quiz that lets you know what stage of function you've got. And you might be fine, but if it's not fine, it's off in three very different ways.
Mm.
And your exercise needs would vary based upon your level. If someone's fit and they're thriving and they're healthy and they're used to being pretty active, they're probably doing fine with that and they wouldn't need to change that. But you hear a lot about how some people can overdo certain types of training, especially aerobic activities.
Right.
And the worst stage of adrenal function I call crashed. And if someone's there, they're really metabolically compromised.
Gosh.
And they definitely should not do sustained ongoing cardiac activities. You know, a little stretching, a little calisthenics. That's about it for that level. So yeah, it depends upon where someone's at. But by and large, if you're feeling awful for a few days afterwards, that's not a good fit for you.
Yeah. And if somebody is somebody wants to know, like, sort of how to do the carb cycling routine, you know, a lot of people in the bodybuilding realm know about that, and, you know, fitness buffs know about that. But the average person, how did they carb cycle?
Yeah, easy thing. So Adrenal Reset Diet, there's a free cookbook, and that tells you how to do that.
Mm-hmm.
AdrenalResetDiet.com, you free download cookbook, tells you how to carb cycle. And this is a funny thing because I coined that term in about 2011 when I was first putting together this manuscript.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, the big publishing world is a slow process. So it was December of 2014 when that book hit the market. And by that time, you're right, the bodybuilding community also use the carb cycling in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
They talk about doing no carbs for a few days and then high carbs for a few days.
Yeah.
That's a valid strategy to drop some weight before a performance or something. But my context of it is each day is the same, but you do less carbs in the morning and more carbs at night to help the cortisol rhythm.
There you go. And people do the reverse, don't they?
You know, that's what you hear. Say, well, if you're going to have carbs, eat them in the morning when you can burn them.
Yeah.
So think about this one. You know, runners are famous for doing a pasta meal the night before a marathon.
Mm-hmm.
They don't do a pasta breakfast.
Yeah, absolutely.
So in the evening, your body is more insulin responsive. And in the morning, you're more insulin resistant. It's part of the circadian rhythm.
So I've gotten into fights with doctors and physicians about this, like just friends of ours, you know what I mean? I'm like, dude, you don't need a big breakfast. Stop telling people that. I mean, it'll make you tired.
you're exactly right. Breakfast is not fueling your day. It can be useful time to get some nutrients or stabilize your blood sugar, but we're not currently metabolizing our breakfast for fuel. It takes at least about 8 hours to go from your mouth to your leg to actually get energy into your muscle tissue. And we most effectively do that. We do our best job making glycogen, our most powerful energy source, at nighttime in the evening.
Awesome. As we wrap it up, a couple more quick questions. First one being about gluten. What role does gluten play in all of this?
You know, I encourage those who are jumping onto the adrenal reset diet to avoid it.
Hmm.
There's a certain percent of people that have celiac disease and they medically have to avoid it.
Yeah.
And there's this whole non-celiac gluten sensitivity.
Yeah.
And as a doctor, there's really no good test for it, but there's a lot of people that they say, hey, I cut out gluten for a few months and I have better digestion. And so there's so many good gluten substitutes as far as cookbooks and foods nowadays. It's not hard to swap that out. So it's worth doing and trying for yourself.
But you'd say that, I mean, because there's so many people that argue about this whole thing about gluten and gluten-free and all of that. And do you think it's just that there just isn't enough research out there
I don't find it compelling as far as from the medical literature is not strong by any means, but there are many who feel better and function better from it. So it's a safe thing to experiment with. And if it's, so it's useful, you know, the thing is there's all the foods you're avoiding when you're going gluten-free are foods you probably want to avoid anyway.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I say. Exactly. So, okay, cool. And then supplements, let's talk about that. A lot of people with adrenal problems or thyroid problems, like they'll go to the doctor. The doctor will give them, like my mom, for instance, recently, she goes to the doctor. Doctor tells her she's got thyroid problems. He gives her, you know, a prescription for, I think it's like pork glands or something, like pig glands or something like that, a thyroid medication. And it's like, what's going on here? So what's going on with that, and how do we deal with it?
Well, so thyroid disease, the most common one is Hashimoto's.
Yeah.
And that's an autoimmune process to where your body destroys your thyroid. And there's a big continuum. There's the mildest versions and the worst versions. But for some, there's a point at where their factory just can't crank out parts fast enough. You know, their body can't make the hormones that are needed. And sometimes that can be improved upon, but there's a strategy of taking pills to compensate for what the gland is not producing. And it's been overdone. A lot of the pills have been synthetic, but there are times where there's a place for it. And I'm a fan of the more natural types. Currently, those are pig-derived. It's called natural desiccated thyroid is a medication category. Mm-hmm. So it's got a place for it.
So that actually helps you speed up your thyroid?
Well, to be precise, it doesn't speed your thyroid, but how your thyroid, the hormones your thyroid makes that would speed your metabolism and speed your body, if you're not making enough, those are a pretty exact replacement for what your body's not getting enough of.
Wow. Okay. And then are there any natural herbs and supplements that people can take for that?
For thyroid function?
Or adrenal, to reset your adrenals. Say, for instance, your adrenals are just drained. You've just totally taken advantage of the energy
drink world. So here's a big contrast. Like thyroid disease, which your mom likely has, that's a disease process, and you can manage it, and you can function fine.
Right.
But it's something that you've kind of got like long-term luggage. Adrenal dysfunction is not that. It's something that you really can reset.
Gotcha. And
there are adrenal diseases. They are more rare. They're not common. But the garden variety adrenal stress or adrenal dysfunction, you can totally reset that. There's supplements that can help. And some of the common ones you hear about are things like ashwagandha or rhodiola or licorice. Now, the shortcoming about those is that they all do specific things to your cortisol. And you don't always want the same thing done to your cortisol. You may not have too much. You may not have too little. Mm. You might be making it at the wrong times. And if there was something I could point to outside of my book, I would. But my book does have that same quiz. Actually, the quiz online does give that same content for free. So the adrenal quiz, if you take that online, that does tell you which level you're at. And from there, you can get some feedback on what are the best supplements for your level specifically.
Awesome.
So that's an easy resource for people.
Excellent. Love it. The name of the book is The Adrenal Reset Diet, Strategically Cycle Carbs and Proteins to Lose Weight, Balance Hormones, and Move from Stressed to Thriving. Dr. Christensen, thank you so much for being here on the show. I really appreciate it. Our listeners definitely appreciate it. And if we could, before we close it out, could you tell us where our listeners could find you if they wanted to learn more about you and your book?
Yeah, easiest thing is a DR, as in doctor, drchristensen.com, C-H-R-I-S-T-I-A-N-S-O-N, drchristensen.com.
Okay, perfect. Sounds great. And I'll link all of these things up, including the quiz and the other websites that you mentioned here on this episode at meaningfulhq.com in the show notes. Again, thank you so much for being here, Dr. Christensen. I really appreciate it, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for having me, Dean. Take good care of yourself.
You too. Bye-bye. If you enjoyed today's episode of the Flash Notes Podcast, we would greatly appreciate it if you took just a minute or so to review our podcast in iTunes. And if you're interested in learning more about Flash Notes book summaries, come on over to getflashnotes.com. Again, that's getflashnotes.com. And you can sign up for $1 and get access to business and self-improvement book summaries that you can read or listen to in under 20 minutes. Thanks again for listening. My name is Dean Bukhari, and I will see you on the next episode right here on the Flash Notes Podcast.